And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi, President of the Common Sense Campaign, Adjunct Professor of Political Science at Spring Hill College, and paid for by Kevin Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the new Shell station up in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, hey, Mark. Glad to see you. Haven't seen you in a while. But, you know, the spring is here, and so I guess we all should be happy for a little bit. But you know what? The world situation ain't too happy. And I think that, you know, for us today, what I want to try to do is talk about what's been going on with this Ukraine problem, try to put it into a bigger perspective as to the dangers and the threats coming out of, you know, what's happening with Putin, where he's going. And then, you know, after we do that, I want to talk a little bit about this whole question of national energy and the degree to which the Green New Deal has wedded Biden and the Democrats to a policy which is inherently insecure and very dangerous, okay? And tie that into their push to have electric cars for everybody by tomorrow, okay? In order to have a good conversation about both of those topics, I've asked Kevin Spriggs to come on, and Kevin is our sponsor, as you just mentioned, is, you know, how he's got his state-of-the-art car wash, okay? Well, he owns all sorts of, you know, gas stations. He has an engineering background, and he is conversant in all sorts of matters pertaining to transportation. And so if we're going to talk about electric cars, I think Kevin will give us a perspective which is an important thing for us to understand why there are some real difficulties with this. The last thing I want to do is talk a little bit about another one of these education problems that have cropped up. You know that we've been fighting Common Core for 11 years now. And what the bureaucrats have done, because the math problem has bottomed us out. We are now 52nd in math in the national assessments. And in 2010, when they adopted Common Core, we were 25th. Our 2009 standards were working. We were doing a whole lot better. And yet, now that we're at the bottom, what do they want to do? They want to create a massive bureaucracy. I want to talk about it because I've already sent out an action alert to our state groups, the ACC, and to, you know, our Common Sense campaign. We want people calling these dadgum House members to stop this Senate bill, which was rammed through. So I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. But, Kevin, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Nice to see you here today.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good to be here. And I want to thank you for sponsoring the show.
Okay? Oh, yes. It's fun. Definitely lots of fun.
Yeah, okay. All right. So here we are. Now, you and I have talked about this question about Putin. And the question we have to kind of ask ourselves is, well, what is Putin all about? What is he trying to do? And does this replicate the 1930s, which, you know, it sure is starting to look like it? What's your sense of this?
Well, in the bigger picture of things, this week just brings back memories of the early 1980s when Reagan first came into office, mm-hmm. and we were putting nuclear missiles in Europe, and there was a big, oh, we don't want to do that, but... You know, the idea that nuclear war could be a reality in the early 1980s, especially.
Yeah.
This is a new. I mean, this was something I thought that, man, I hope this is gone forever. But here it is, back in front of us again. And so, if we look to the actions of our leaders from the past, when there was a Cold War in the there were challenges around the world, mm-hmm. our leaders stood up to the advance of communism, where it was in Vietnam or Korea, even Democrats, President Kennedy, well, with the Cuban Missile Crisis,
sure,
the airlift to Berlin. And I think this is one of those moments where, you know, you have the new paradigm is a dictator that has a nuclear weapon, just runs over and does whatever he wants to his neighbors and tells everybody else, hey, you better stay away, I might do something. Well, at some point, somewhere, that bluff is going to have to be called. And I'm saying his army is bogged down in Ukraine. We see what the performance of that army looks like. And, you know, if we're going to stand up while he's weakened and in a corner, now is the time to stand up. And, you know, the consequences are what they are. But just because if we just stand back and let this mass murder happen, that to me doesn't buy us anything. We are still at the edge of nuclear conflict, because once he has overrun this neighbor, who's next?
Well, okay, who's next is the Baltic states, Poland, and they're all members of NATO.
And there's always a next.
Yeah.
There will always be
an insatiable appetite.
That's right, because this works. Now, well, maybe we're going to try it in Taiwan. Maybe we're going to try it in the Crimea Peninsula. Maybe, as you say, in the Baltic states. Because that threat is going to be there, and it's always going to be there. And it's just a matter of where do you call the bluff and when do you call the bluff? Do you do it now or do you wait till later?
Well, I think that if you look at this in the broader perspective of what Kennedy said in his inaugural address, we're willing to go anywhere, pay any price in the defense of freedom. Now, here we are today with a classic example of the Ukrainians are doing a great job defending themselves. Sure, they're using our weapons and all like that, but my goodness, I mean, if this isn't, you know, the time and the place to make a stand when you've got people who want to fight and who are capable of fighting, it seems like this is the best place to do it. Now, the question is sort of the consequences. How far do we go with this? Do we risk, you know, a nuclear confrontation? Or do we say to Putin, look, we don't want nuclear war, but if it comes, you think you're going to win it? You can forget that too. And so it seems like this might be the best time for us, as you say. He's bogged down, and they're not gaining any of the things that they want, at least in the northern part. And the key is getting Kiev so he can install a puppet. He ain't getting it.
Well, that's right. And just because, let's say you just continue to do nothing, and slowly but surely the Ukrainians die and disappear. Okay, is the threat gone away? And the answer is no. The threat is still there, because the guy that was willing to tell his army to fire tank rounds into a nuclear power plant, that guy is still in charge and still has the nuclear weapons. So, yes, the threat is here and it's reality. And I think everybody's caught off guard a little bit by this. But, hey, this is where we were back in the 1980s. This is where we were in the 1960s. Right. And this is where we were when the Chinese overrun the Korean Peninsula. I mean, this is just a continuation. It's nice that we had a break for 30 years, maybe, but
right.
But hey, this
post-Cold
is the way
War, it was.
It's always been this way, and humanity has to decide, you know, what they're willing to tolerate. Are you going to let tanks just roll over any country, anybody's neighbor, for any reason? Or are you going to continue to be blackmailed by a bunch of dictators that have nuclear weapons? Or does there need to be a policy that says, you do this, here's the consequences?
Well, and I think that to his, you know, everlasting, you know, credit, Trump did move against the Russians, okay? And he moved to help the Ukrainians with lethal weapons. And I do think that, you know, that kind of demonstration of resolve, like with the Iranians, whipped sanctions on them, brought them to their knees because of what they've done, being the state's biggest state sponsor of terrorism. Why in the world did Obama go down this road of giving them $150 billion along with a flawed agreement that only lets them get nuclear weapons? If I'm the Israelis, I'm taking them out. If they sign another agreement, the Israelis have got to take those nuclear reactors out.
Well, right. I mean, there seems to be some type of corruption that we, you know, somebody's either on the payroll or there's some strange benefit going on between the Obama Democrats and the Iranians, and that's just as clear. I mean, who knows inside the Beltway in Washington who's getting paid to lobby for what? But it definitely looks like there's something in it for the Obama Democrats, which are now, you know, in the Biden administration. You know, there's just some kind of favoritism towards Iran, and you know, to me, there's money being transacted somewhere.
Right. Well, I think that getting back to this whole question of how to deal with these dictators who really want to just do whatever they want to do. Now, we've imposed...
Well, not just that, Dr. Liu, but to use, like when they start to do something, to use nuclear war as
a shield for them to do whatever they want
and
to
do. And that's the thing, you know, if that's the only reason we're not intervening or providing additional aid to Ukraine, then where do you draw that line at? It could be anything, anywhere. Oh, we're going to do this, or else there'll be nuclear war. Okay.
Right.
Well, there has to be. Well, yeah, if there is a nuclear war, what's going to happen first? And I hope that our people are telling them that all your military facilities, you can go bomb the civilians, but your military facilities are going to get hit first. So you guys that are fingers on the button, you better be hiding when you push that button.
Well, I think there are two things about this. Number one, the former Soviet Union had always had a doctrine that they believed that they could win a nuclear war. Most people in the West think that nuclear war is going to be the end of the world. So if you have an opponent that believes that they can, you know, defend their population and come out of this in a way that they could claim victory, then, you know, it does create a major issue in terms of, well, are we really willing to go down that road? But the other part of this too, though, it seems to me that we can, in fact, hurt Putin, and we've started to hurt him with these sanctions. The ruble is down. Their stock market's going crazy. People are losing their savings. The money's not worth anything. So the degree to which you have this kind of economic turmoil that's starting in Russia that could very well lead either Putin to think, maybe I better just extricate myself and stop this hemorrhaging.
But
or,
unfortunately, though, Dr. Liu,
no, he doesn't care
sanctions,
about that.
Yes. You know, the sanctions will not remove a dictator. Otherwise, we wouldn't have the bozo in Venezuela that we have today. We wouldn't have Cuba still under communism. And Kim Jong Dum Dum would still not be in North Korea. The dictators do not care about their population whatsoever.
Exactly.
And the sanctions will hurt the Russian population, no doubt, but they should definitely be imposed because they will make it difficult for the regime to, you know, manage their internal affairs and their resources.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't had North Korea invade anybody yet.
Right.
We haven't had the Cubans invade anybody, and the Venezuelans are definitely not invading anybody.
Right.
And that's the way it needs to stay that way,
right,
of course. But what's going on now is we actually have a hot battlefield here where we have tanks and mobile armies, you know, murdering civilians.
Right.
And trying to force political, surrender. And we're being held back by the threat. Well, if you do this, that's going to be war. Well, Dr. Liu, it's already war. When somebody is sitting there and extorting from you, saying do this or else it's nuclear holocaust. Okay, well, we lived with that for many, many years.
Right.
Confronting the Soviet Union all over the globe. And now here it is, we got a dictator again. He thinks he can put the Soviet Union back together.
Right.
Okay, and he's old, and maybe he doesn't care if he gets nailed, but this is what his madness is done. And, you know, if he's allowed to accomplish his objective and then consolidate and rally the nationalist element inside of Russia, he doesn't need, 100% of the population to go along with him. He only needs maybe about 3 or 4% of the Russian population to buy into this nationalism, and there will be no place safe in the world from this guy if he's allowed to succeed.
Well, I think when you look at his, marriage of convenience with the Chinese, you're looking at the same problem in terms of China being emboldened by what this guy's doing, and you've got Xi, who really wants to take Taiwan. He must be saying, after Afghanistan, look at what Biden did. Look at how he's been feckless in terms of supporting Ukraine. When the Russians started to put troops around in March of 21, The Biden people stopped a shipment of lethal weapons that Trump had already set in motion. Now, if Trump had been, you know, in president, he would have just continued to do whatever he had to do and probably would have ripped up everything and to make sure that that the Ukrainians were strong. But my point here is that deterrence that you talked about in the 1980s was possible because people like Reagan and before him made sure that people knew, you know, we're putting missiles in there. And, you know, and that was the height of some of the biggest anti-nuclear demonstrations in Europe. They were so scared of having Reagan the cowboy punch the button and they were all going to die.
That's right.
But he did it anyway.
But he did it anyway. And we had presidents before him that stood up to the same thing.
Right.
And that has kept at least a large portion of the world free because not being willing to live under the constant threat of we're going to do this or else it's nuclear war, or we're going to take over this, we're going to control this, you interfere, it's nuclear war. Yeah. Well, okay, you got to call that bluff somewhere.
Right.
And what I'm saying is if you look at the condition of what Russia has stepped itself into right now with the invasion of Ukraine and it not appearing to go that well, when's the time to stand up? And I say it's when he is tied down. Don't wait till after he's done, and then he consolidates all his political power, and he gets the Russian nationalism all going. Oh yeah, we can
claim
do
a victory.
This, and the West they'll run away scared because we'll just threaten the nuclear war if they interfere. And so I think this is a great awakening, especially for the folks in Europe that were all about a new Green Deal and global warming is the biggest threat and all that. It's a wake-up call that, no, guess
well,
what?
Well, even the Germans
the
have waked up to it.
Old-fashioned threats are still there.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, you know, from the standpoint of deterrence, what you said about Putin being bogged down, and this would be an opportunity, and I think the opportunity is there for sure. And the degree to which Biden is willing to provoke the bear is an issue because, like I said, they stopped a shipment that Trump, a lethal shipment that Trump had already set in motion in March of 21. Then he had another shipment that they were supposed to give to them in the fall of 21, and that was slowed down. And then just recently, my understanding is, the Stinger missiles that Ukrainians have been begging for only got there last week, according to listening to the analysts who are on top of all this. So the question you have to ask yourself is Biden going to be that vessel who can actually convey a deterrent, you know, has a manifestation of a deterrent, you know, capability? Because I mean, think about Biden. He's been wrong on every foreign policy issue he's dealt with, whether, you know, 35 years ago as a senator or even today. Look at what he did in Afghanistan. This is not the guy that we want to hang our hat on for deterrence.
That's right. The legacy of the Biden and before that the Clintons is this: let's just travel around the world and get all of our buddies on everybody's payroll so that they can make millions of dollars. And,
right, through the Clinton Foundation.
And the foreign policy objectives of the United States, we need to be friends with people and so forth. And having a very weak foreign policy, you know, it's obvious that the objective, and the Clintons were masters at it, and Bidens are just kind of second-rate players in this, but the objective of the foreign policy needs to be in the interests of the United States, not the interests of the Clinton Foundation and the donors of the Democrat Party. And that's what has kind of led us to the weak position that lets a tyrant like Putin say, well, those guys are a bunch of bozos. We're just going to go over there and do what we want to do.
Here's the legacy of Obama, and he set this in motion. It's lead from behind. His argument in his Cairo speech in 2009, he went there to Cairo, and all he did was criticize American foreign policy, basically say it's America that's the problem. Meanwhile, you know, he's making nice with the Russians in order to get his nuclear deal with the Iranians. This is the problem that they have set in motion, and I think that the mixed signals that have come from the foreign policy establishment, especially on the Democrat left side, has created in the minds of our adversaries that these guys can be rolled, and that's what's happening.
Exactly. That's it. And then to some extent, our European allies have been a major part of that. They've been players in that, too.
Well, Euroweenies.
And now they're like, oh, my goodness, this guy, he will roll tanks over people.
Yeah.
He will take over his neighbors. He really does want to restore the Soviet Union. You know, I mean, it's a wake-up call. And I just think, you know, rather than hand this off to our kids,
yeah,
you know, it's our time to stand up. I mean, the past generation stood up when similar things happened.
Right.
And you have to call the bluff. That's what happens. That's what happened in Korea. That's what happened in Vietnam. That's what happened in the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what's happened in the Berlin Airlift. That's what happened in the 1980s when Reagan put missiles in Europe.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the Soviet Union, that might make them jump to war. Okay, go ahead, jump to war then.
Right.
Okay? But you stand up. And it's the only language that tyrants understand is
right.
that force is real and it hurts.
Right.
And if it's not there, I can do what I want to do.
Okay, so let's think about this then in terms of national security policy and our dependence now on Ruski oil, okay, and the degree to which that has propelled this Green New Deal thinking that we have to go immediately transition to all renewable energy, which is theoretically possible, but it certainly isn't real now. And part of their argument is that, you know, the sooner we get more electric cars going, the better everything will be, and we'll be able to wean our way away from fossil-fueled gas engines. Now, there are some, I would argue, and I know you have argued this, major problems with that. Tell our audience some of the problems you've seen with that thinking.
Well, the major problem starts at the beginning where the federal government is mandating this to be done. If we let the free market decide it, it will be done in a very efficient way. It will be done in a way that the American mm-hmm. public will accept. But what we have is constituents of the Democrat Party and some Republicans in Washington where the people that are making the components of electric cars, the Chinese Communist Party, which is going to be one of the biggest benefactor of electric
yeah.
cars, they are pushing this and trying to use political means to force it on the American public. No matter what, even if batteries are perfect, it takes you 2 minutes currently to fill your car up with 16 gallons of gas that in most cars will give you a greater than 300-mile driving range.
Right.
Okay. If you look at electric cars, the cars that give you the same range use batteries that are 80 to 90 kilowatt hours of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It is physically impossible to transmit that much energy over a wire with electricity in 2 minutes' time. If you run the calculation, the voltages are either ridiculously high
mm-hmm.
and dangerous, or the wire is ridiculously fat and heavy. This is a limitation of not of technology, but the laws of physics. I tell people, I say, look, when man learned how to fly, they did not do so by negating the laws of gravity. The laws of gravity are still there. But we figured out a way to get to oppose those laws with other physical laws. The laws of electromagnetism tell you that when you transmit energy over a wire, it heats up, and that the wire can be bigger and carry more energy. But with electric cars, you will always be anywhere from 15 to 20 minutes, even if there's an enormous amount of electricity somewhere that can charge you. Now, imagine that, like gasoline, you go to a gas station, you got 12 people on other gas pumps filling up while you're filling up.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what happens when 12 people simultaneously want to charge their electric car, and how much voltage, how much energy will that be to transmit over a wire? And that's where the electric car, the charge paradigm, breaks down.
Yeah.
Electric cars will find a place in the American economy in the commuting sector, where if I've got a small car that I just need to drive back and forth to work and I can leave it plugged in my garage and charge it up overnight, that's great.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to Disney World on vacation, or I want to go tour some national parks, electric cars are not going to do that. So what's going to happen is the government is going to start telling people, well, you know, you're really not important enough to own a combustion engine. You drive the electric car, or you get on the city bus, okay?
Yeah.
Or you get on the train. But the combustion engine, well, you know, that's bad for the environment. But guess what? I'm sure Democrat Party members and the so-called important intelligentsia,
yeah,
they will get special permits and special exemptions so where they can drive their gasoline vehicle anywhere they want to, anytime they want to. And your freedom to do that is going to be gone.
Well, you know, some of the things that we've talked about in terms of just the mechanics of these stations and the fact that there's not going to be any standard in terms of, or at least right now there isn't, in terms of being able to match your battery up with the station plug.
Well, here's the thing. We could standardize the plugs, and there's like two or three standards out there right now, and there are ways to cross-convert. But no matter what, it's the number of people. That's what people don't understand, how vast and enormous the gasoline business is. I mean, when we're talking about the Strategic Petroleum Reserve and Biden released 60 million barrels.
Right.
That's 3 days of oil supply in the United States. That just goes to show you how vast that supply line is. The small oil refinery that we have in Saraland that makes gasoline makes 80,000 barrels a day of gasoline. 80,000 barrels a day. And that's a small refinery. If we look at one of the big guys like the Chevron refinery over in Pascagoula, now we're talking about 500,000 barrels a day capacity there. And that's one of the bigger, you know, one of the top 10 in the country is in Pascagoula. Okay, so you see the vastness of that business and the amount of the public that likes to travel on holiday weekends or you know, go spend a weekend at the beach and all that.
Right.
It's an enormous amount of fuel. And when you compare that to electricity, it's just the laws of physics make it very, very difficult to transmit that much energy.
You can't replicate what you have in the gas stations. I mean, how many hundreds of thousands of gas stations that are in the country.
Right, and the time factor, the ability to fill
2 minutes to
fill a car
minutes.
Up in 2 minutes versus that time runs to 30 minutes, and you can say, oh, well, I'll just go to the bathroom. And well, I mean, all right, so you might be taking 5 minutes to fill your 2 minutes up. But when you go to 30 minutes, and then when you go to, for example, everybody in the state of Louisiana that drives through here, you know, on spring break.
Right.
I mean, that is an enormous amount of electricity, and I'm just telling you, you cannot transmit that much electricity through a wire. That is a laws of physics limitation that we will never be able to get around. That it's got to be a different paradigm. The batteries have to be swappable, might be a way to get past that, or some type of fuel is put into a battery to recharge it, as opposed to using electricity over a wire to charge it. That is fundamentally wrong. But because the federal government, the Democrat Party donors, and all the Washington establishment is making
their
a
dreams.
Killing off of that,
you're
going to be forced into that paradigm.
Well, Kevin, I know that we could probably spend another hour on this, and I see that your half hour that you paid for is up, okay? And so I always call on Lori. I'll call on Mark to just give us 2 more minutes and we'll go. But
Two more minutes.
So I want to thank you for getting here today. This was an interesting topic tied to national security, and I think that the more we talk about this, the better off.
Energy independence is the best
long-range
strategy for national security.
Exactly.
You cannot be held hostage by every two-bit dictator that happens to have a nuclear bomb or claims he's got a nuclear bomb.
Right.
I don't want to live in that world in the future. I don't want my kids to have to live in that world.
Well, thank you for coming in today. I enjoyed our conversation. I will end this just on a quick note to everyone. I sent this email action alert out to the Alabama Conservative Coalition and to Common Sense, basically saying this SB 171, which is, and you can go on the Common Sense website, you can find more information about it. Go to Eagle Forum. They've got a good analysis of it, too. The fact of the matter is, we have been talking about the math problem in Alabama, and it's all tied to Common Core. It's not just math, but our argument has been the math is the low-hanging fruit. Everybody knows how messed up it is. The parents hate it. Now, after COVID, they've seen what's going on, and they don't like it either. And once again, we get back to this fundamental solution. What is the solution for us? Go back to the 2009 standards, which were successful. We were 25th in the nation. They were working. And I make this point. Minnesota never changed their standards from their 2007 standards. They did not go to Common Core. Guess what? They're in the top three in the assessments every year. And unless we do something along those lines and not following a $92 million, you know, startup for another bureaucracy, we're going to just, you know, ruin another generation. So, and you know, the thing about it is, too, we've just talked about this national security issue. Well, guess what? If our economy down here is dependent upon getting $2 billion a year from the beach, if gas keeps going up, it's already at $4. I hadn't, Mark, maybe you I don't know when the last time you bought gas. Kevin, you see gas prices every day.
Absolutely, $4.
But for me,
over the weekend, yeah.
I haven't seen, I didn't buy gas for about 10 days. And yesterday, I had to go to a Chevron station. It was close by. And he's a Shell guy. So, I mean, $4 for gas? I said, uh-oh. This economy here in Alabama is dependent upon people coming in and spending money and getting here. You keep going. Nobody's going anywhere this coming summer if we're at $8 a gas.
At least in gasoline, there's some competition. Can you imagine what you're going to pay per kilowatt hour once everybody has to use Alabama
exactly.
Power to charge their vehicle?
Yeah. So, folks, do me a favor, please. Go to the Common Sense Campaign website. Take a good look at our argument here. Get in touch with your state House representative. Tell them absolutely no to SB 171. We don't want a new bureaucracy to ruin math any further than it is. All right, so that's it for us. Mark gave us a couple of extra minutes. Thank you so much, Mark. And I hope you don't get in trouble with Miss Laurie, but, you know, that, she's a tough taskmaster. Do hope that Laurie's fiancé is doing well with his surgery. And we will see you all next week. God bless. Take care of the United States of America. Bye.
You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College, and brought to you by Kevin Spriggs and Kevin Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the new Shell station in Malbus with the state-of-the-art car wash.
Listen for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, paid talk show, Monday mornings at 10:05 with Dr. Lou Campomenosi.
It's nuts. It's not science. It is just politics, and that's all it is.
Listen live online or on the radio, or pull it up later on our new website, WABF1480.com.
For this afternoon, variably cloudy, there is a 60% chance for showers and thunderstorms that will continue for tonight and also Tuesday.